The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Well, welcome to Friday and another installment of Fast Money. Here's what's on the show tonight. We're going to take a look first at the breaking news in shares of Nikola. We're watching those shares down by about 15% in the aftermarket session. We're getting news here that Nikola has is selling shares into the open market. Let's get straight to the story here. And Karen Feinerman, we had noted that for Nikola, at least, they had registered an S-1 back in the middle of June, which would have paved the way for insiders to start selling. And this is what we're seeing take place in the after-hour session.
Right. I mean, it's not surprising, right, given what the stock has done, that insiders would want to monetize some of these extraordinary gains. I can't quite tell how much is insiders. I think any stock associated with the warrants would seem to me to be insider selling, which is fine. It's just, you know, I don't know what prices is going to get done exactly, but still, it's just enormous from where it was. I mean, it hit 80, then went down to 40. I mean, it's just been a crazy ride. So I don't blame them for wanting to take money off the table, but I wouldn't be a buyer on that offering.
It allows insiders the sale of up to 53.4 million shares. So we knew that this was happening. In fact, you know, some analysts said this is sort of a ticking time bomb hanging over investors. And yet we are seeing an outsized impact here on the shares, Tim, on a day when NIO gets rated a sell over at Goldman Sachs because of the run. I mean, we've seen an enormous run in the entire space here.
Yeah, so some of these high momentum stocks, obviously, you know, within even the auto, EV, hydrogen, fuel, you know, the entire space has been a place where momentum traders have been chasing momentum, and they'll also be chasing on the way out. But we've said for weeks these valuations are difficult to justify. We've had a lot of dialogue with the CEO on the show, and I think trying to understand how much of this is promise, how much of this is reality. Look, the company certainly has CapEx needs, but this is a case where people are really taking some chips off the table, and it's not necessarily a case of a primary, but it's actually a case where people are going for liquidity. It does make some sense, but it's disturbing, especially in the context of a lot of promises that have been made.
It's down 17.5%. Steve Grosso, some people might be taking a look at this and thinking, you know, this is my opportunity to get in. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, this all hinges on that growth value play that we talked about. Yesterday, there was a headline that Deutsche Bank put a $54 price target on the stock. So I think this is just, as we all know, very, very early in the story for the stock. I don't know what to do with it here, nor do any of us. No one could say for sure. But it does seem that if growth comes back, this stock will probably rocket higher. But it's way in the infancy. We're not really looking at any trucks. We're not really looking at any factories. This is way in the early innings. This is a crapshoot.
Well, that was actually, you know, for the bulls out there, no factories is actually a good thing, finding a partner to manufacture as opposed to taking on that cost by Tesla guy. But, you know, I think in an initiation note by RBC, they said this looks more like a business plan and not a business, to Grosso's point, of a company being in its infancy and yet being rewarded with such a high multiple.
Yeah, because I think people harken back to when Tesla went public and they're like, maybe I got a shot at the next one, which may or may not be true. And listen, we've had Trevor Milton on, I think, three times now, if I'm not mistaken, at least twice.
Yep.
And I'm sure, you know, he can amplify or explain what's going on. But I'll say this. If this was Apple that did something like this, and something like this meaning, you know, announces a secondary on a Friday in July after the market's closed, I'd say, you know what, that's not very cool. And that's exactly the term I'm using. It's not very cool. Might be fine. It might be a huge buying opportunity. But there are people out there that are probably long the stock that look at this and say, you know what, I feel like I just got rooked. And that's the reality of the situation. And that's why people get so infuriated when they see certain things like this. Again, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying the timing of it stinks, in my opinion.
Karen, should investors think there's something nefarious going on because this comes on a Friday after the markets close? Or did we sort of know about it because the registration was filed and so it was a possibility at that point on?
Right. I think to be given the benefit of the doubt, I mean, right, the registration was filed. I think the stock had traded well above the price that the rights could be exercised for enough time. So if you were familiar at all with the SPAC, this particular instrument and the warrants, then you should have expected. But I agree with Guy. The Friday night thing, not cool. It's the least good day to do it.
Yeah. Agree there. All right, let's move on and talk about the markets. The transports trucking higher this week. IYT Transports ETF rallying more than 6%, far outperforming the broader markets. And, of course, this goes to what Steve Grasso was talking about in terms of value outperforming growth this week. What does this say about the future of the economy, Guy? Because I know that at heart you are a Dow theorist. You believe in that theory that the transports are a leading indicator of economic activity. So this should be a good thing.
Yeah. I am a Dow theorist. I actually was one of the early writers of the Dow theory back in the early part of the prior century. So I'm very familiar with exactly what it says. You know, I think most people would admit that Dow theory today means something different than it did 50 or so years ago. I don't think it's nearly as important to the economy. And this is not me trying to sidestep. I just think it's a much different economy now in terms of the meaningfulness of the transports. With that said, yes, good for Tim, Karen, and Steve. They've been on this, especially Tim with Federal Express, and you know it's had a tremendous move. I will say this, the IYT here at 176, I think is where we closed, is smack up against the levels we saw when the S&P topped out in early June, right around that level. So now it's proven itself. Now it has to prove itself to get through this level of resistance. So FedEx absolutely has broken out of a 2.5-year downtrend. That's a good sign. The IYT needs to close above 176 or so, in my opinion, to verify that.
Tim?
Well, so think about mid-May is really when we started to see the change in the transports and the change in behavior and the outperformance against the S&P. So, in fact, the entire transport sector has outperformed the S&P by 14% in the last 43 days. This isn't a move that happened overnight. But we certainly in the last 3 weeks talked about the disparity between growth and value. So if you look at something, first of all, the S&P outperformed Amazon by almost 8% in this last week that we've just gone through. So we've seen a lot of these stories, but you know, you had KSU out there, reported some numbers, reaffirmed numbers they had effectively given you. Remember, a lot of the story with FedEx was also a lower cost base and starting to see some momentum in their ground business and some call it operational efficiency in the overall business model. But if you look at that chart also, and you know, Carter may or may not have a view on FedEx specifically, but that pop from the earnings that it held, it's essentially a flagpole formation. It's a stock that spent 2 years underperforming the market. And I am a Dow theorist, at least in terms of if you follow FedEx and you follow exactly what it did, it massively underperformed the market from Jan 2018 through to those lows, well ahead of the market, and much in the way that transports will also outperform when there's some sense that some of the leading indicators have bottomed. I don't know where we are with COVID-19 and the real economy, but I will tell you that FedEx is following a script that I think it should be following right now.
Yeah, J.B. Hunt, by the way, on earnings, better than expected earnings, new record high in today's session. Karen, are you in FedEx?
I am in FedEx. Yeah, for a little, I just got too cheap. So I agree with Tim on FedEx. The one thing that, you know, Guy had mentioned the Dow theory, you know, it's a leading indicator. And I'm wondering if some of this strength was when the COVID situation was looking a little better, maybe three or four weeks ago. And if we might see another little bit of a slowdown as things have sort of reclosed. So I don't know what to do with FedEx. I still think it's cheap, certainly relative to itself. It's got a long road, a lot of ground still to make up. So I'm not selling any here, but I wouldn't be surprised if we did see a little bit of a pullback in the IOIT. And some of those earnings today, the railroads were up going into them.
Right.
And still were still they performed well. So even over the bar.
All right, let's switch gears here. We're watching AstraZeneca set to release on Monday some early stage trial data for its coronavirus vaccine. Shares of the company have climbed nearly 14% this week ahead of those results. Britain's ITV reported this week that the results could be positive here. And Steve Grasso, a lot of this rotation that we saw this week was built on the back of vaccine data, positive vaccine data from various companies. So could we see this rotation continue going into next week, assuming that the AZN Oxford study also has good news?
Yeah, I think we're going to be looking at this all the way into year end. Goldman Sachs has pointed out that there's probably four vaccines that are in the later stages being ready for use. So we're going to hear about these topics and headlines for probably the next couple of months on an everyday basis. I still think IBB, best way to play it, up 17% year to date. Amgen, Vertex, Gilead, Regeneron, those are the ways that you're going to kind of mute your risk. But when you look at stocks like Moderna that was up big today and that have rallied tremendously, you're never going to get those gains unless you're in the right one. I just doubt that anyone really has an inside track on all of these to know which one to pick. So I think for the average person, the IBB is probably the best way to go.
It's interesting that Moderna's shares popped again today, up 16% in anticipation perhaps of AZN validating some of their results. But, you know, there was a note that crossed my inbox today from Baird about the release on Monday, and it basically said if it shows that there was antibodies produced, that there was a T cell response, and that it had pretty clean safety and side effects, then this could actually be very bad news for the smaller and mid-cap biotech stocks that are in vaccines, because it could show that big cap pharma is actually the place to be, because they've got a handle on it with much bigger trials and potentially a better ability to manufacture, Guy.
In terms of AZN, absolutely. I mean, we've talked about big cap pharma now for the longest of times, even when they had the sort of the crosshair of both parties on their back. I mean, they've really done well. Eli Lilly's been a monster. And we've talked about IBB, to Steve's point. I think it made a new all-time high again today, and that continues to grind higher. So, you know, I can't speak about Moderna, the move today. I still think that's one that if you've enjoyed the move higher off that 50 handle, you're taking profits in the name. Again, not to cast any aspersions there, I think you're really playing in the deep end of the pool. But with IBB, again, to Steve's point, at least you mitigate some of the risk in a space that I still think has tremendous upside.
All right. Of course, the other big sector mover this week, technology, falling from all-time highs. The sector underperforming the broader market, as we had mentioned. Amazon putting in its worst week since February. So what is next for this sector? Carter Worth is here to lay out the charts for us. Carter, what are you watching?
Sure, there's a couple of things, but just I think it's worth noting we are sort of in the history books, if we will. We've gone 91 sessions without having three consecutive down days. Now, if you look back at the history of the entire sector, all sectors date back to 1989 when they changed the nomenclature. This has only happened one other time, right? It happened in the July to December period of 2004. We went as many as 108 sessions without having 3 days in a row down. So we're at 91. This would be the second longest ever. And it's worth pointing out that in 04, after that happened, the sector dropped about 15% in a period where the market dropped 7, so twice the rate of the market. Let's look at a few charts, one of three. The first is what we know, how orderly this has been. This is essentially looking at the tech sector since the low. And you can see here, as I've annotated, we've had six distinct drawdowns, right? I mean, they're very clear there on your chart. And you can see that the duration, typically 3, 2 days, 3, 2, 1, 4, all very short term. And the drawdowns are between 8 and 5%, almost universally. So down 8, down 6, down 6, down 7, down 5. So you have these dips. And this is the part that's in the history book. They hold and they stick and they don't follow through. So the question is this second chart. We are now right on the trend line that's been in effect since the low of March. Will this be like 04? Will we actually eke out a bit more? Or are we already on borrowed time? And the message from Amazon and the weakness in Adobe and some of these others is that this has reached its sort of end run. The final chart is a two-panel chart. And just to put this in perspective, regardless of how good this is, and it's been darn good, what we do know is this, that the tech sector has still not recovered its losses to the S&P since its peak. So you're looking at now a two-panel chart. That is the entire tech sector on top. And on the bottom is the tech sector's relative performance to the S&P 500. And you can see that that on a relative basis, meaning the gains are still not as much as the gains of the S&P dating back to March of 2000.
Does this mean the entire index falters, Carter, or does this mean a change in leadership?
Well, remember, I mean, that has been the hoped for thing. There's always trades and cyclical things, but there is no enduring play in a value name. A value name imputed in the process, right, is that one sees an opportunity, a mispricing, whereas growth, something that's winning over time is where your money wants to be. You don't want to find something that you can catch a trade unless you really have that kind of dexterity. Over time, you want to find businesses that are disruptors, that are taking market share on a long-term basis. So can Ford Motor beat Adobe on a three-month basis or Royal Caribbean because there's a virus? Sure. However, on a three-year basis, betting on a Royal Caribbean versus a Microsoft, that's a ridiculous thing.
All right. Carter, thanks. We'll see you later on Options Action. Tim Seymour, that sounds pretty dire.
Well, once I figured out what nomenclature means, I definitely got excited about it. I think it's very difficult to see tech breaking this outperformance relative to growth. And again, that's on a PE basis and that's on an absolute basis. I think we'll see growth value come back into the fold. A lot of these industrial names have some room to go. But giving up on the tech trade, I think people are just waiting for a pullback.
All right. Coming up, we'll be joined by Sheila Bair, who ran the FDIC during the financial crisis. Where does she see the banking industry going post-pandemic? What does she forecast for dividends? And don't forget to tweet us. We've got yet another round of Total Request Fast Money. Send us your burning trading questions. We'll answer them live. Stay tuned.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. Saving, researching, investing. Now you can take those investments to the next level with Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today. I have an investment account with Schwab and a 401k with Fidelity, and I use Yahoo Finance to consolidate them so it's incredibly easy to manage. They've been helping great investors like you for over 25 years. So whether you're a seasoned investor or just looking to level up, Yahoo Finance can simplify things, putting all your tools and data in one spot. Yahoo Finance takes a 360-degree look at the financial news cycle, from breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, and customizable charts. They've got you covered. You can see all of your 401k and other investments by securely linking your brokerage accounts. Yahoo Finance gives you insights and helps you see your wealth in its entirety. That big picture perspective helps smart investors become even better. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor. YahooFinance.com, the number one financial destination. YahooFinance.com. That's YahooFinance.com.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Former Fed Chairs Ben Bernanke and Janet Yellen testifying on the Hill today, sharing their views on the government's policy response to the pandemic. Their bottom line, more may have to be done. In their Brookings blog post out today, Bernanke and Yellen write, based on our experience in the global financial crisis, we think the Fed may find it needs to go further. It is possible the pandemic will so damage the economy that credit losses mount rapidly. And specifically, they were talking about what the Fed has done in terms of limiting dividends. So what could the Fed do next? So let's get some answers from former FDIC Chair Sheila Bair. She's now the director of the Volcker Alliance. Sheila, great to speak with you as always.
Great. Thanks for having me.
You have said in the past that you hoped that banks would not pay a dividend. That would be the responsible thing to do. The earnings came out. You say that they are better than expected. But what do you think the banks are underestimating in terms of the damage the pandemic could cause?
Well, I think there's just tremendous uncertainty. Better safe than sorry. Conserve the capital now. If it turns out to be better than we fear it might be, they can always pay a special dividend. I do think this the banks that rely more on lending, take deposits, make loans, the traditional lenders are going to be the hardest hit. We're seeing that with the second quarter results. They're being hit hard by compressed net interest margins and also loan losses, provisioning very high. So they, I think, should particularly be conservative because really the small businesses, the households, they can't access the corporate debt markets that are wide open thanks to the Fed. They need bank lending. And so conservatism there, I think, is particularly important. For the big Wall Street banks, yes, they did have a good quarter, but that's mainly for government intervention. So let's face it, those profits are coming courtesy of the Fed through their underwriting fees, their trading profits. And I think that's not going to continue, and most of them acknowledge that's not going to continue. A lot of that's their, you know, corporations are pulling forward. They're issuing a lot of debt. I believe something like $1.2 trillion of investment-grade corporate debt has been issued this year. An amazing amount, but that's only going to last so long. And some of these companies, they may borrow now, but I don't think they're going to make it. And those losses will eventually flow through into the banking sector. So I think really everybody, regardless of your business model, needs to be very cautious now. I would be suspending dividends, holding that capital. You can distribute it later if things turn out better.
Karen, you have a question for Sheila.
I do. Thanks for being on, Sheila. So my question is, sure. Is there a way for the Fed to target more specifically the regional and smaller community banks that haven't been as benefited by some of the capital markets activity?
Yeah, well, that's a really good question. And I think they've been trying, but it really underscores their tools just aren't equipped. They're good at infusing money into large financial institutions, supporting financial markets, getting help into the smaller institutions. Direct support for Main Street lending is something they're just not well equipped to do. I think we need more action from Congress. I'm hoping we'll have another stimulus package. We need household support. We need more support for small businesses. It really needs to come from the politicians. The Fed's just not well equipped. As I've spoken on this show before, I think ultimately digital currency might provide a way with congressional authorization for the Fed to get support more directly to Main Street. But now their tools are just to prop up financial markets. It's very difficult for them to get help more broadly into the economy.
All right. Sheila, we're going to have to let you go. It's always great to speak with you.
Sure.
Thanks for phoning in.
Yeah, thanks for having me. You
Sheila
bet.
Bair, the former FDIC chair. Karen, I know you took note of this, but the CFO of Bank of America said significant credit card losses won't show up until 180 days past the end of forbearance, and we're still in that period. So, I mean, 180 days, that's quite some time. It's sort of a delayed, you know, readout of what the consumer is feeling, and I don't know if the loss provisions are enough, Tim, for unforeseen and uncalculable losses.
Yeah, I think the sense is that the banks, and think about the loan provisions were even amped up that much more. I mean, and to Sheila's urgings, you know, I think J.P. Morgan took a lot of those trading profits and plowed them into higher provisions. I thought that was pretty conservative. But it does tell you we're very concerned. Look, this morning, you know, I'm reading that Moody's has a record 414 companies on their list of financial trouble. If you're a large institution, and here we are seeing the Fed go out and buy the debt of Apple and other big companies, but those companies have no problems issuing debt. That's not where the problem is. And you know, think of the retail sector. Think of Brooks Brothers, J. Crew, J.C. Penney. Think of all these companies that filed for bankruptcy. So I am of the view that I think there are, you know, the credit cycle is worsening, not getting better. And I you know, if the argument is to be conservative on dividend payouts, I think investors should want that, too, for the balance sheet of the companies they invest in.
All right. Coming up, calling all T-Mobile bulls. Has the stock peaked or is there more room to run? That trade ahead.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Already time for the final trade. Let's go around the horn, Tim.
Yeah, we talked about healthcare earlier in the show. UNH, very solid second quarter, somewhat subdued on their outlook, but they're staying the course, and I think investors should. This is breaking all-time highs, and I want to stay there, UNH.
Steve Grasso.
So I bought ON Semiconductor, ticker symbol ON, and I bought it going into option expiration today. It bypassed that strike price of $21. I decided to hold on to it. There's a couple upside price targets that I'm looking for, roughly around $30.
Karen.
Yeah, so I'm not finding a lot new to buy, and I don't want to sell what I own, but I do want to buy S&P protection. The VIX is near as low as it's been since the crisis started, 25 and change today, so S&P puts.
Guy.
Intel, Mel, it's $60, feels like it's going higher.
All right, that does it for us. See you back here on Monday. Options Action's up next.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.